Hello and welcome to this episode of Around the Fire. I am your host Liz Fry of LizFry.com, and this episode was originally recorded back in November 2020 as Grant and I marked and celebrated World Men's Day. Put a post out in a group that I belong to saying that I was looking for a man, well, a few men actually, which caused quite a stir. But what I was actually looking for was not someone to spend my life with, but some men to talk to about men's stuff, because November is International Men's Day. And here in New Zealand, there's a lot of issues that men struggle with, and you know, our suicide rates are reflective of that. And some courageous men have come forward to share their story in the hope that maybe even if just one person hears it and realizes that they're not on their own and that there is hope and that there is light. And one of the first people to get back to me was Grant. Grant, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth. Very happy to be here. Not nervous at all.
No, absolutely. So, I hadn't met Grant before this opportunity. And sometimes on the show, I have people that I have shared the journey with in whatever way for a long time. And then other people, they just give me a brief rundown. And I'm like, yeah, I want to talk to you. So I'm coming in here kind of blind and really looking forward to, where this goes from here. So kind of feel that it may be best to start at the beginning, Grant. And are you able to share where you you were, how life was happening, and how the sort of mental health struggles came into the mix?
Yeah, sure, thank you. So I guess like the overall picture is that I've suffered through depression and anxiety, which led to alcoholism. And as you point out, like starting at the start is the key, because it really is a step through process. Like one step leads to the next. So for me, I was really lucky in that I had really cool opportunities for work at a pretty young age. So kind of early 20s, had reasonable amounts of responsibility at work, managing branches and things. And then by the time I was kind of mid-20s, I found myself in quite a big role, having to manage kind of 9 branches for a really awesome company that I used to work for. And I think like a lot of guys, or a lot of us, I should say, we tend to take the path of least resistance. And so, an opportunity comes up probably at work and you don't really think about it. You just say yes and jump into it. And you don't really think about what's that going to really entail? What's the effect going to be like on you kind of personally? And, back then in particular, I had a really massive ego and I just wanted to next job more. And so suddenly I was kind of 26, 27 and running, 9 branches and middle managers that were in kind of 40s and 50s reporting into me and wondering why they're having to report into this kid, really, which is I had hair back then too. I'm now so I found myself in this position of kind of authority and stress and pressure and excitement and all those things that go along with it, but I hadn't yet had enough life experience to build in appropriate coping mechanisms. And what that kind of meant for me was the more stress that I found myself in, just the harder I dived into work. It was kind of like you run away from the stress by working more. Now, the problem with that is that when you work more, you produce more and then you get the next job. And so it was kind of like the self-fulfilling prophecy that I was driving myself more and more into these really stressful and challenging times, and started to notice health effects pretty early on. I think like a lot of Kiwis, you know, we finish work and we get home and you have a beer after work and or a glass of wine. I think it's a really common kind of part of our society. And I think that we don't maybe realize that maybe for some of us, it's not just having a beer or a wine for a wind down after work. Maybe it's more of a self-medicating kind of approach. And man, without that beer or two beers or glass of wine or bottle of wine, you know, you're not sure how you're going to face the next day. And it really, for me, it really was that. So kind of alcoholism started to come in probably earlier than I came to the fore, before depression and anxiety really dug in. At least that's how it felt. And in hindsight, I can see that it was kind of always lurking in the background, I guess, and the moments right back to childhood that I've, you know, since gone through and kind of tried to work through that kind of point to, yeah, maybe there were some of these traits or characteristics that were there earlier. But yeah, so I found myself starting to, you know, you'd finish work and you get home, you're so stressed and in any job, it's hard to let go of your work day and just be present in the moment and be there with your family. And so to do that, I needed to turn off the noise in my head, turn off all the constant replays of the stuff that I'd said that day and had I managed this situation right or wrong or you know, was I doing a good job or not? And the only way to turn that off was to have a couple of beers. You know, like I will say, you know, I guess for the record that I was lucky in that I was able to separate work and drinking out, but it was really quickly that it became evident that without being able to without using alcohol to turn off that voice in the back of my head, I would really struggle. But then, of course, that gets, you know, more and more prevalent, and you know, you find yourself waking up on the weekends. This is obviously pre-kids for me, waking up on the weekends and, oh, it's Saturday, what should I do? Why don't I have a beer? And then the next thing, it's Monday morning and I'm back to work again. I'm like, wow, you know, that was a pretty quick weekend. And luckily I've got an absolute saint of a wife, without whom I would never have got through and would never, I just quite simply wouldn't be here now. And you know, both of us were probably in a little bit of denial and didn't want to say the alcoholic word, you know, like it's got so much stigma and it's so awful. And you know, we forget that it's actually just a medical condition. And you forget that for a lot of people, that alcohol dependency, it's, you know, it's a disease like any other disease that we can get. But when we did finally start to realize that, hey, you know, this is something, you know, that's having an issue, it's almost too late. And you know, at the same time, career-wise, I had gone into the next job, which was the general manager role. Suddenly there's more reports and more money and
more pressure and more drinking.
Yeah. Exactly. And then I decided, well, that's not enough, I better do an MBA at the same time. So just, yeah. And what I found, what was interesting, I met some of the most amazing people, still friends today through that course. But what it also showed me was how many people in really high kind of level roles self-medicate with alcohol. And it started to scare me. And that really was when it started to hit home, like, okay, actually, I need to make a change. Like I'd gone from fit and healthy, well, relatively speaking, you know, like 95 kilos to 135 kilos in the space of a few years, not even realizing it was happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? We've sort of got that view of alcoholism as, you know, needing the vodka in the morning or whatever it is to get us through the day. But yeah, there absolutely is the other side, that it's that either the binge drinking or that culture of just every day and self-medicating, as you talk about. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, welcome back. I've got Grant here. And yeah, we're just on the subject of how much alcohol had crept into Grant's life through the sort of pressures and the corporate setting. And, you know, it's interesting because I haven't drunk now alcohol for nearly 2.5 years. And yeah, I realized in hindsight that mine was very much an escape and, you know, particularly when I was stressed. And the only time that I've really been tempted in this time to start again or to have a drink is when I'm stressed. You know, I can be around, you know, people having a laugh, people having a drink and all the rest of it, and I'm not bothered at all. But yeah, when those stress levels come up again, it's such a go-to thing. And yeah, Thankfully I found other things now. But yeah, interestingly, even last night I arrived at my friend's house and I was like, oh, have you got any of those 0% beers in? But you know, and I just haven't been tempted by that at all. But yeah, there have just been a few things that have gone on and I was like, yeah, I fancy one of them, and they did the trick, so that was great.
But that recognizing itself is just such a powerful tool, just to be able to see, even if you continue, and you know, people that don't have an issue with alcohol, just recognize that that's what you're doing, and I think that takes a lot of the power away from it itself.
Yes. Yeah.
For me, I had I had kind of lost control of alcohol, and if I was going to drink, I was going to keep drinking, and because of that, realized, right, time for a change, and so went down a number of tracks looking for help, tried AA, met with counselors and a number of counselors, and ultimately found that. The key for me was in self-acceptance, and really just the love and support from my wife, like unconditional love. I think that's the only way to deal with addiction. When somebody falls off the wagon and drinks, for example, I think, you know, saying, why did you drink? That's terrible. That's the worst thing you can do. But saying, hey, like, you know, I'm here for you. I love you so much. You must be in so much pain that's caused you to get to this point that you've drunk. You know, how can I help you? Because that's the reality for an alcoholic. It's pain that leads to the drinking. And so, yeah, we started to deal with it and started to make headway, which was fantastic. And the problem then, of course, is that now I don't have this crutch that had been there for me for a decade, basically. You know, like ultimately I'd made the decision to move out of the corporate world, so left that company in 2015 to do our own things, and that was great because, you know, we were lucky, we had some time and a little bit of space to figure out what to do, but nature hates a vacuum and will fill that vacuum, and suddenly my most common thought was, because I couldn't silence them with alcohol anymore, was, all right, What did I do wrong today? And that was like this constant just floating in the back of my mind, you know, like, and when you're constantly asking yourself that question, when that's a default setting, and if people stop and just kind of listen to themselves, and you know, what is the prevailing kind of feeling is almost better than words, you know, but it's more of a feeling than a question, but really that's how it was formed, you know, what have I done wrong today? And my starting point was because I want to improve, you know, hey, let's assess what's not going well, and then I can fix that, you know, and it'll be great, it'll be better and better. Yeah, but what I realized was that default position is just awful. You're constantly looking for what's wrong with you. Like, how can you expect to be happy if you're constantly looking for what's wrong with you? So depression started to sink in, really quite very, very severely. And unfortunately, for me, the anxiety came with that. It's not always the case. You know, some people suffer from anxiety and not depression, and vice versa, and some both. And I must admit I found anxiety significantly more difficult to deal with. And the reason I say that is that depression, like, everything was gray or brown in the depression, you know, like you're just sitting there and it's just, you have no sense of hope. But also, like, I got to a point where I could sit in that hopelessness and just, you know, kind of like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh, and I can be Eeyore, you know, I can carry on at that. And yep, I did have suicidal thoughts and I did have, you know, issues that things got pretty close sometimes, and thank goodness for the people that I had around me. But honestly, it was the anxiety that just really ultimately got to me and led to, yeah, like really severe kind of patches in my life where I couldn't get off the couch for, you know, a week or two at a time, or led to falling off the wagon with alcohol a couple of times. And you know, I heard this amazing quote, and it says there's two, I think it was Mel Robbins, either Mel Robbins or Brené Brown that said it, but they said that, you know, there's two things that can bring on an anxiety attack. Firstly, something that's worrying you, and secondly, anything at all. and that's kind of how it was for me. That was certainly my experience. I remember walking into the Bayfair shopping center here in Tauranga, and being in the farmers with my wife, and she turned to look at me, and she could see just out of nowhere for no reason, and she could just see the wide-eyed panic. Now, when that's happening, what's really occurring is your body is sensing a threat. And the problem with an anxiety attack is that your mind can't find the threat. What is the threat? We don't, you know, like, and so it's looking and it's looking for this threat. So it's dumping cortisol into your system and adrenaline, and it's spiking all of, you know, this anxiety. And for me, how that materialized was I just had to run. I had to get out. So this happened a number of times, but this time in particular, I remember just, you know, we had our first child, I think just the one by then. And she was in the trolley, and I gave her to my wife, and was just like, I gotta go. And she knows, she's like, just go, and know that you'll find me somewhere in the parking lot when you're in the car or something. And it's just running, because it's like, you have no idea why, but you just have to run. You have to get away from this threat. And that I found incredibly difficult to deal with, you know, particularly having gone from being someone who would, you know, on the fly get up and talk to 1,000 people and that's fine, to suddenly not being able to stand in a shopping mall, you know, like that was a really significant, it hurt a lot. Yeah. And that for me was a realization that I needed help when I started feeling those types of, that level of, like anxiety attack. And then of course you start worrying about the fact that you're going to get in an anxiety attack. And so that leads to more attacks. And, yeah, that was a key turning point for me, when I was like, okay, right, enough is enough, and I need some proper help.
Welcome back. I've got Grant here over from Tauranga, and we are talking depression, anxiety, alcoholism, corporate world stresses, and everything else in the mix, loyal wives. You were just finishing off the last part, Grant, talking about the anxiety and things. Were you working at this point?
Yeah. So at that stage, we had set up our first company. I got a couple, and so that was a double-edged sword. It's fantastic being your own boss and you know, having your own time and choosing how to spend that was great, but of course there's no guaranteed money coming in each week, so you have to make sure you're putting the hours in to work it, and it did take a while for us to get there, but I do think that I was really lucky to be able to have just, you know, some time and just be that little bit of, how would you say, sense of control over my time, I think was a major factor. You know, funnily enough, it actually led to some of the rules in our company now, one of our companies, where we have no start time, no finish time, unlimited sick leave, unlimited holiday pay, and any staff member can leave work at any time for any reason. And this is simply because of our focus on mental health. We think it's so important.
Wow, that's just giving me massive goosebumps.
Yeah, it's really fun, man. I love being able to do this kind of stuff now. Yeah. People think I'm crazy, but it works. We all want to just do a good job, so why not give adults the freedom to choose how they do that?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And I probably don't even need to say that I bet no one abuses it.
No one. Yeah, it's all self-governing. Yeah, we're all there for each other. It's awesome. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, so you were just starting to get some help, I think, around the anxiety and things?
So that's I had a series of really major anxiety attacks, and that led to me falling off the wagon with alcoholism. I keep saying thank goodness for such a patient and you know, loving wife. But what I realized then was that, you know, when I say alcoholism, you know, the last week that I drank, or I drank over 60 beers and 22 bottles of wine in a single week. Like, it's awful. When you're looking at your recycling at the end of the week, like, that's not okay. It's terrible. And so what I realized, and I can't stress this enough for anyone that's listening to this, is go and seek professional help. Start with your medical doctor. I didn't realize how dangerous stopping drinking was when you were drinking at those significant levels. And the major reason behind it is the amount of sugar that's going into your body. So you almost become the potential to suffer literally heart attack, literally on the back of it, in the same way that it's really dangerous. So go and seek help. So I did that, and that was really helpful. There's particular protocols that the doctors will follow to help with alcoholism to get you off it. I'm personally really not a fan of opiates at all, like diazepam and lorazepam and things. I think the side effects are so significant. However, I had no experience of any of these things at that time. And they put you on a really high dosage of diazepam, and there's specific protocols that they use to ease you off it. That had a massive effect from a physiological, chemical, I guess. So that really helped. And then I coupled that with two things. Firstly, I made the decision to be open with people. So I stopped hiding. And the amazing thing about that is that we all, as humans, care about each other. Maybe groups get grumpy at other groups, but as, you know, one-on-one people, we all care about each other. We're all having this human experience, you know. And that was amazing. And what I started to realize was that strength actually lives in vulnerability. The more open you're willing to be, the stronger you become. And you start to find your own strength, which was really... was kind of new for me, you know, like sitting in that hole and suddenly starting to just feel this little flicker of hope and this little light that's there. I'm like, okay, maybe there's a bit of a future here. So the medication was helpful. I did in the end end up also being given antabuse, which is a really good tool to use. All it is, it has no effect on you whatsoever. It just stops your body's ability to process alcohol. So if you have antabuse in your system and you put a sip of alcohol in, you're going to hate life for 24 hours. Trust me, it's awful. I've experienced it. do not recommend it. But that does two things. Firstly, what it does is it reminds me, like, oh, well, I've had this thought, I've had this negative experience, still now my thoughts go, oh, maybe I should just sneak off and go have a drink. And I'm like, oh, no, well, so I'm not taking antabuse at the moment, but no, I'm not going to do it. But at the time I was like, well, I can't anyway, even if I want to drink, because I'm going to be so sick. So that's the one effect. The second effect, which I hadn't even considered, is the people around you want some sort of confirmation, or how do I know that you're not going to go out and drink this morning, you know? And so, you know, being able to say to my wife, yeah, I'm taking my antabuse, take it. And she knows, like, if I have a sip of alcohol, I'm going to be hurting by the end of the day.
That for that to work, people have got to be at a place. You definitely feel like, it sounds like you're on that part of your journey that you were wanting to make the changes and, you know, open to whatever was being offered and suggested, kind of thing. Because I imagine some people, it might just be, if they're not at that place, well, I'm not going to take that antabuse, and then, you know, it's not
going to. Yeah. So the hardest part that I still find now, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, I guess, you know, the hardest thing that I find is asking for help in the moments that I want to drink. And so it's really hard when you're in that moment. But what you do have is you have moments of clarity. So often in the morning, you wake up, start of the day, nothing's happened yet, hopefully. And So if I'm really open with you, I'll tell you. So about a week ago, I had a really tough situation and I woke up the next day and I was like, I just can't face the day. What am I going to do? And I could feel it just starting to creep in the back of my mind. I immediately at that stage, while I still had some modicum of control, went and quickly took a pull because I'm like, it's done now. No matter what happens later in the day, I can't drink. So it allows you to use your strong moments to put the thing in you that stops you when you might be weak later.
Yeah, so it's not something that you would take at that time.
Yeah.
Because then you wouldn't take it.
But exactly.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So when I am feeling good and I'm determined and all the rest of it, then that's when the pill's taken.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but I think just as important as, that deals with the coming out of alcohol. And I did stay on some opiates for a while longer to help deal with the depression and ultimately really didn't like the way they made me felt. And I had a friend going through something at the same time and he was trying to come off opiates and I was like, man, I do not want to have to go through that. So I went back to the doctor and I was like, I'm going to try to do it without that. It did mean that the depression really spiked then in a big way and anxiety attacks were back. And so then it was the people that you have around you. So I'm really just so blessed and lucky to have met a couple of guys that I actually work with over the last couple of years, 2 or 3 years. And we've kind of formed a bit of a bond and we've all, all got our own stories, but the ability to talk to each other and lean on each other. I don't mean to be sexist at all, but in a really like guyish sort of a way, last week when I was having this bad time, I said, and we all feel like this, I said to, this friend, obviously I'm just a waste of space and I shouldn't be here anyway. And his response was, don't bring that weak bloop, 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 bloop here. I'm not going to stroke that. Get over that. Let's talk about what's really happening. And it's so important because you can't say to someone with depression, oh, look on the bright side. Obviously it's the worst possible thing you can say. But you also don't have to play into their perpetual negative self-talk. And I think it's really important to, just snap it into this moment because the key is to become focused and present in this moment. And actually one of my friend's mum was a brilliant counselor and she saw me for a few months and we just started that was incredibly helpful. I can't stress enough the importance of seeking professional help. It just has had such an amazing effect. And then I saw her for a while and it seems to follow like a natural cycle. So I think maybe we're scared to start because we're like, oh, we don't want to have to do this forever and, Kara. And for me, it was like it came to a kind of a natural cycle and a natural ending point. And so we, I stopped going to Sarah, but kept in touch. The old text here and there, it's great. And then after that, another friend who is a qualified hypnotherapist, which I hadn't heard of before, I didn't know anything about it other than what you see on TV. And I thought she was wanted to make me dance like a chicken or something,
That's all it's used for.
I was like, I'm not sure that's going to help. I had 3 sessions with her and she hypnotized me. And it's amazing how incredibly powerful our minds are, incredibly powerful. And she just took me for a journey through to the starting points, and over 3 1-hour sessions, I was able to go back and I know this sounds out there, but a year ago, I would not have been saying this out loud, but I literally went back through and spoke to myself as a child in this one specific situation where a huge amount of anxiety and a sense of like not being worthy stemmed from. And I was able to speak to myself as a child, as the loving, caring adult that I needed in that moment. And I came out of that was our second session. I came out of that and I just felt like, it felt like it suddenly quickly stacked up all the negative situations from that point to now. It was like, it's not a silver bullet, but it did feel like, man, I could just release all of that hurt, I guess is probably the best word. The sense of unfairness, which is for me is a huge trigger. It doesn't matter if it's unfair to me or someone else, it's a huge trigger for me. And being able to to release that and just be like, you know what, you're actually okay, and you're right where you're going to be, and you need to be, and you are loved, and you are cared for, and you do matter. You know? And suddenly I was like, oh, okay, yeah. And then literally the next week when she came for our next session, she was like, hey, I can feel it. You haven't brought any energy here. You're so light. What's happening? And I didn't even end up getting hypnotized in the last session. We just chatted. It was just dealing with stuff that's happened in your past matters. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think at the beginning you were talking about, you know, drinking because of the pain and things. And absolutely, you know, I do believe that that's why we do these things, because of something that, yeah, that we're carrying that happened, particularly in those younger years. And, you know, if we can really sort of connect with that and start seeing what's going on underneath, then, you know, your journey has been a beautiful mix of, yeah, you know, some medications and things, as well as dealing with the underlying stuff, which I think is just the key. And, you know, if people come to me and say that they're going to start antidepressants, I'm like, you know, if that's what you want to do, then great, but please look at what's going on as well, because yeah, as you said, when you started to come off yours, then the depression spiked again, and that all comes back. Where are you at now? What can you share with listeners that may just give them that flicker of hope for them? Or yeah, can you share a bit as to what life looks like for you now?
Yeah, sure. So life is pretty good at the moment. I definitely have my challenging days, but now I have tools to deal with it. So I think the thing that I'd like, if there's one takeaway that I can give to people, it would be, with everything that you have, try to remain present just in the here and the now. The more, like, I've done so much reading about like Stoic philosophy and philosophers and like Alan Watts, for example, is one of my favorite philosophers. And there seems to be this consistent thread through everything, which is come back to the present. You know, like, there is no such thing as the future and the past. There is only right now. And you know, when we get to tomorrow, it's still going to be right now. You know, like, there is only the now. And so I say to people, and they laugh at me, you know, they you know, I'm asked, yeah, well, what do you do when the spikes come? Like, what do you do when you're panicking? What do you do when you're stressed about tomorrow and your mind gets into these crazy negative loops and this downward spirals? And don't laugh at me, all right? my answer is, think about your feet. And they all look at me like I'm crazy. And I'm like, it's like this, okay? If, for me, thinking about my feet brings me right into this moment. So right now, for example, like a couple of times, literally in the last half an hour that we've been chatting, I've done this myself. So right now, okay, I'm starting to freak out. Oh my goodness, what are my feet doing? Okay, well, I can feel my socks. I can feel my shoes. I can feel, I can feel the chair. And then, you know, it all starts to come. And all it does is it's just something that just brings you back into this moment, something that makes you focus. And the reason that I think it's so important is that there's a number of studies that show that we're aware of about 7 things at any one time, plus or minus 2 is basically the rule of thumb. I think there's a book actually called that. And effectively, what we're trying to do with bringing ourselves back into the moment is we're trying to shut out all that noise and just come down to a singular focus. And you'll be amazed the effect that just bringing yourself back into this moment can have. So that's my first big takeaway. Think about your feet. So find something that works for you. That's the same kind of idea, you know, something that, slap yourself on the leg, you know, pull your ear, something that just brings you into this moment. So that's the first thing.
And I think the idea, you know, sorry, with that is the simplicity of it. that's you don't want long processes and things and what was step two and all the rest of it in that moment. You know, it's just something that we can do anyway, even when we're driving or whatever it might be. Yeah, the simplicity of these things really has got to be the key. Carry on. Number two.
So, well, I was going to say, I used to say to people, I live my life from other people's perspectives, you know, in other words, constantly trying to see what are people thinking about me. So trying to, and you do, you project yourself out to look at yourself from these external views, and by bringing yourself into this future, into this present, it just reminds you that this is who you are here in this moment right now. So that's my first kind of immediate tip. And for me, it really helped and hopefully might help others. And then the second thing is, and again, this is a kind of a hard concept to grasp, but maybe, but we are not our thoughts and we are not our emotions. Like our thoughts are nothing more than electrical pulses triggered. And the second you engage with that thought, so you get an emotional reaction, which of course makes that thought feel real, but it's not, you know, like that thought is just something that popped into your mind. So being able to see that thought is the first step. So you're wanting to separate your sense of consciousness and your sense of self from those thoughts and those emotions. And I think that's just such a powerful thing. I heard this really cool way of doing it on this podcast I was listening to yesterday. And the guy's like, he uses hashtags. So, you know, he was confronted with a situation and he was really riled up by it. He felt really angry. And he's like, hashtag Mr. Angry's here. And just that that recognizing that it's this emotion and this thought that's not him, but that's coming to visit him. He can then say, you know, and I talk to my thoughts. Like, I'm like, hey, thank you, anger, for, I haven't used the hashtag yet, but you know, thank you, anger, for coming to me now. I know that you're here for a reason, but I think I've got this and I'm okay. I'll get back to you if I need you, but thank you. And becoming friends with your own thoughts is an amazingly powerful and kind of mind-bending situation, because you do start to realize, like, you know, hold on, maybe I'm not my thoughts. But because we've all been so stuck in our head, you know, of course, who else am I if I'm not my thoughts? Well, my question to you is, well, who is it that's hearing the thoughts? You know, who is it that's sitting behind thinking about that thinking, you know? And so to me, the mind is an amazing tool. It's like our processing power is brilliant, but it's a terrible master. And if you don't give your mind a task to do, it's going to run wild. So give it something to do. Yeah. Become friends with it.
Love that. Yeah, that is so true. And that's what I work with. With clients. We've got a process called the Bold Frog. And it's very much around, you know, recognizing those feelings when they come up and then stories that are going on. And then, sort of just really being grounded and, you know, separating ourselves from them. Absolutely. Because as you say, if there's part of us that knows that that's going on, then that's not going to be who we are. And I'd love to hear, so at the beginning you talked about you know, when you had the busy head going on, then the alcohol would help calm or suppress or stop some of those questions and thoughts going on. And then when you didn't have that, then you went into the sort of, well, what am I doing wrong kind of place. Do those questions and thoughts come into your head now, and what do you do when they do?
Yeah, so absolutely, all the time. Like we're really good at replaying situations in our head. Like, and you know, you'll be lying in bed, it'll be 10 o'clock, and you know, like, oh, what's on the brain show tonight? Oh, here's where I bathed on my boss at the last Christmas party. Let's replay this 1,000 times. You know, like this type of stuff comes up, you know, constantly, and I think it's recognizing the thought, like that's what I attempt to do every time now. And it is, it seems like almost silly to begin with. I don't really know how to put it, but because you don't get the impact the first one or two times, because you have to build this habit of spotting your thinking, of seeing the thinking. And what I found is that the power that you get from recognizing that you are not your thoughts is just incredible. And that sense of, I guess, separation And what I mean by that is you can once you can see your thoughts as being separate to you, like, you know, it's almost like you're floating down a river and the thoughts of the trees as you go past, oh, you know, there's an angry thought, there's a happy thought, you know, whatever. And the second that you create that sense of separation, so you get to choose which of those thoughts you engage with. And then it does, you know, to be honest, like it's not easy. Like it does take work and it does take discipline. And I can guarantee you will fail a number of times. The key is to know that that's okay. And to just keep trying. And I guess coupled with that, something that I had overlooked, and it's now because of guilt, because I spend so much time away from home, work and drinking. Any time that I'm not home now, I'm like, oh my goodness, I should be home with the family. I should, you know, and so I found it for a long time really hard to just go and do things that fill my own cup. So, you know, like I love boating, and so I'm trying to learn, I'm very poorly trying to learn how to sail at the moment, which is, I've been upside down a few times, which is interesting, but you know, doing these little things once a week to just go and take some time and recognizing the importance and doing that and just filling your cup, and that it's not only okay, it's absolutely essential that you do that, because if you don't fill your own cup, you have nothing to give anybody, including yourself, when times get tough.
For men and women, absolutely. Yeah, and when some of those guilt feelings come up, how do you is it that same thing again, just recognizing what it is for what it is?
With the guilt, so definitely first I recognize I'm feeling guilt. Okay, then it's like, why am I feeling guilt? Okay, well I think it's because of X, Y, Z. And then the next is, okay, well how am I going to deal with it? And so for me, I struggle with the guilt one a lot, like a huge amount, but I talk about it. So I talk to my wife about it. Like communication is everything. I'm like, hey, I'd like to go sailing on Sunday. Already I'm feeling guilty and it's only Thursday and I'm thinking about it. What do you think? And you know, she's like, no, of course you must go. So that's great. You know, cool. And then, well, what else can we do around that to help alleviate? So let's go spend time on the beach with the kids. You know, like the communication is just, is really important. And what I've recognized is, you know, quality time with kids, particularly young kids, is just so important. And just as important as showing them that it's okay to also have your own interests and your own, you know, life, I guess, in a way as well. It's been an interesting thing in our family. My wife also feels bad, you know, terribly bad being away from the kids. And so we're both kind of learning that together at the moment, which is cool. But yeah, definitely spot it. Ask yourself why do you think this is coming up, and you know, like your subconscious is pretty powerful. If you give it the space to tell you why, and if you ask it, you know, why is this coming up? What is the lesson that I need to learn? And in fact, again, yesterday I learned this cool technique. You talk to the emotion, like, okay, guilt. I see you, Mr. or Mrs. Guilt. Thanks for coming up. I don't want to replay this over and over. I don't want to feel this. So how much time do you need? You need half an hour or a minute or 2 minutes? Okay, great. 2 minutes. All right. Now let's go through this guilt feeling for 2 minutes. Why am I feeling this? The answers start to come, and what's cool is you can then put it down at the end of that 2 minutes. You find this kind of sense of calm, like, oh, okay, I've dealt with it, I've given my subconscious time to tell me what it needed, and I can kind of move on. Yeah, but it will come up again and again and again. Well, at least it is for me still.
Absolutely. And you know, we have had however long of these patterns and beliefs from childhood and things playing out, so yeah, it is going to take time, but that self-care and topping up your tanks and filling up your cup absolutely is a non-negotiable in my books. And everyone benefits. That's what I share with clients. You know, you might feel selfish or guilty, but actually it really is in everyone's best interests if you're doing your thing and looking after yourself as well.
Absolutely.
Wow, amazing. Anything finally that you would like to share, Grant, or feel free to finish with your last
trick? Really the last thing I'd like to share is just particularly to the guys, like ask for help. There's so many Facebook and Instagram groups, and just joined another one actually recently, and went for the first walk with guys that, you know, I knew one of the guys out of the group, this last weekend, meet at 8 o'clock at a cafe and go for a walk, you know, like, reach out and you'll be amazed from all walks of life, how many people are suffering with, you know, pretty severe, in some cases, mental health issues. So, seek help. Yeah.
Brilliant, Grant. I can't say thank you enough. So much gold in here, and I feel that I would definitely love to have you back on another time, because there's stuff that we ran out of time to talk about, and go back to talking about values and how, you know, we really can be that inspiration for other people when we don't even know it. So yeah, really appreciate your courage and your vulnerability to share and be so open today. Thank you so much.
Oh, and thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it. You're not nearly as scary as I thought it was going to be.
Good to hear. Thank you.
It's amazing. Thanks so much, Liz.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Around the Fire. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you've gleaned some ideas or some information, some thoughts, or maybe even feeling a bit inspired right now. I love getting feedback, so do contact me via my website, liz-fry.com, if you'd like to share some thoughts, or if you're feeling that actually maybe you'd like to share your story, maybe that you think, okay, yeah, it's time that I want to get my story out there, then I would absolutely love to have that conversation, and I'd love to have you on the podcast. Do get in touch, and we'll start to make that happen. The music that you've been hearing throughout this episode was created specifically for the podcast by an amazing man called Jake Keanu Skinner. You'll find Jake on Facebook and Instagram under Theta Soundscapes by Jake. And I would ask you to go and have a bit of a explore and listen to some other tracks that he does. He plays an incredible amount of instruments and weaves them together in ways that I've never heard anywhere else. So do go and explore that afterwards. But for now, I would ask that you just take the last couple of minutes of this podcast to listen to the music, imagine the embers of the fire in front of you, and just take some time to be still and take some time for you.